The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
No one truly believed the West would crumble, that the global order would collapse, that humanity would drift back towards another world war. Yet here we are in 2040, standing amid the wreckage, asking ourselves where it went so wrong. They're the opening words in a new book called 10 Steps to Stop World War III. And the author of that book, former UK Defence Minister Tobias Elwood, joins me on the line to talk about it. Tobias, good morning and welcome.
Good morning to you.
Now, as I say, you start your book with a fantasy. We're in 2040 and we're in the midst of World War III.
It is a dystopia. There's no doubt about it that this is where our world, from my perspective, could slide to unless we wake up, unless there's an urgency to where our world is heading. I mean, today's headlines remind us constantly we've entered a darker, more dangerous chapter. Nations are rearming, new alliances are forming. It's understandable that we're now making increasingly more parallels with 1937, with authoritarianism on the rise, aggressive powers rearming, and a West which is risk averse. America is now going back to more an isolationist approach. And those international institutions back then in the 1937, it was the League of Nations. Today, it's the United Nations, powerless to hold these errant nations to account. But for much of the world, life seems to go on. We're in denial. And this is a big call to say, wake up, look where this could go.
Now you say wake up. And the line you use is that we are actually sleepwalking into a World War III. First of all, World War III will not be necessarily like World War I, a war of trenches and I suppose the beginning of technology in war, or World War II, a war of bombings and front lines. It'll be a war on many fronts.
Absolutely right. I mean, that's the big distinction. When we think of World War III, we do think of nuclear Armageddon, perhaps two sides. The world definitely is splintering between the West and the East, with many now looking towards China for stability, for some form of security, even though there are questions about, you know, how they actually operate. But they're not getting the leadership that we'd expect from the United States and indeed from Europe. So a World War III would be a war on multiple fronts, not just in the conventional space, but in economic wars, gray zone warfare, in space and so forth. So this is the complication of a world at war, with countries trying to come to terms with who are their friends, who are their enemies, and actually how to survive. Challenged on top of that, of course, with the fragility of our planet, with climate change adding another dimension of challenges. So all this put together allows you to recognize that there could be so many trigger points towards sending us to a world at war. And we need to wake up and start repairing not just the alliances, not just our commitment, but even understanding what our enemies are actually up to. As I said, you will end up with one of these flashpoints taking us over the top.
I mean, you make the point that we should stand for something. I mean, we built all of these institutions, particularly in the post-World War II era, and then we allowed them to crumble. We believed after 1989 and the fall of the wall that everything was hunky-dory. Thank you very much. Things will never go back.
You're quite right. I mean, it's interesting, those points in time, which I relate to in the book. 1946 was a good year. We'd defeated tyranny. We'd set a set of rules that you just touched on that hopefully were going to allow countries to work together. And there were big countries, particularly America, Britain and others, willing to enforce those rules, to stand up and uphold those rules. And 89, 1990, the fall of the Berlin Wall, the collapse of communism, another great year. And yet here we are. It's difficult for anybody to say that the next 5 years, life isn't going to get more difficult, more dangerous. And yet, how did we get here? What should we do about it? And that's exactly what the book is all about.
Now, I mentioned the fall of the wall, the collapse of the Soviet empire, I suppose. And we all thought, you know, we're making progress. There'll be a detente, a real detente between East and West, da, da, da. And then we decide we're going to trade with everybody. The WTO and the idea of having free trade around the globe, wonderful. And then you point out, well, certain countries saw it as far more wonderful than others, and allowing China into the WTO, they said, yippee.
Yeah, I mean, these are two pivotal points that you mentioned. Is firstly, the demise of the Soviet Union, the collapse of the Warsaw Pact nations and so forth, and that influence over Eastern Europe. Understanding Russia and its history is actually pivotal to understanding what Putin is up to now. And the fact that if you replace him, actually Russia's strategy will not change. That it's the game of risk, if you like. That green is always very difficult to defend. It's 11 time zones. How do you defend such a vast area? You attack and you keep attacking. You make sure that other nations are scared of you. This is what Ivan the Terrible did. This is what Peter the Great did, Catherine the Great, Stalin did as well. And Putin is then following this. And of course, on China, you mentioned something so important, the power, the economic power of China. Yet they got into this club, this World Trade Organization club, on terms which they weren't ready to agree to. They made promises, but that's allowed them to absolutely escalate their, not only their economic influence, but now their military influence as well.
But I suppose the term you use, I think, just from memory, is that China became the world's factory. It made everything for the world. And that, of course, gave it the economic clout to become the military power that it has become. But understanding your enemies, you say understanding Russia, what it wants, expand or die. Understanding China and how it felt for a century humiliated by the outside forces.
Yeah, I mean, this is so important because most people are aware we've had to hand Hong Kong back to the Chinese, but few perhaps understand how we got it in the first place. What the Chinese called the century of humiliation. There were dynasties, one after each other, leading up to the Qing dynasty, that were very powerful. They called themselves the Middle Kingdom, and they operated for millennia. And then in the 1800s, the West turned up wanting Chinese tea and other things, and we invaded. We started the Opium Wars. And that's what's always made Chinese very, very mistrusting of the West, believing that they would do it all again, which is why any economic leverage they have and the funds that they gain from that is invested in strengthening their defense because they're worried the West will do it all over again. That's understanding China, the perspective that they see the rest of the world from.
Also, I think it might be instructive for Donald Trump, if he's capable of absorbing it, to learn something about the history of Persia, modern-day Iran.
Well, so important indeed. And this is where, you know, learning from history. Firstly, the idea that even if you have superior military might, the most technically advanced military in the world, you cannot change politically what's on the ground. Vietnam was a great example of that. And it was so saddening to write this book and yet at the very time have to update it with what Trump is then doing in Iran. You simply cannot change the ideology in the way he's wanting to. For them, for the Persians or the Iranians today, the regime, victory is simply standing up to you know, the world's largest power and surviving, even if economically and militarily that they're held back. But also back in 1953, which is when we were on good terms with Iran, we actually sent in MI6 and the CIA to get rid of a prime minister that we thought was getting too close to the Soviets. They remember their history, but we tend to forget it.
Now, your step three is stop repeating history. And you mentioned Vietnam. And of course, following on Vietnam, the United States has Iraq and Afghanistan and now Iran. Why do great powers who should know better and certainly have the intelligence to be informed more comprehensively, why do they repeat those mistakes?
Because they think they are different from the past. They think they have more understanding of what's going on, and they feel that they're militarily, technologically more advanced than in the past, and therefore can offer greater clout and influence. But it never happens that way, and that's the sadness of this. I mean, you mentioned Trump himself. I mean, that is another chapter in its own right, is the fact that he has broken the commitment from successive American presidents to uphold the international order, that very order that the Americans helped write back in 1945 and 46. But he said, no, thank you. I believe that the world order is crumbling. I see the world as a big jungle now with big beasts. And those big beasts are going to have influence in their areas. And for America, it includes Venezuela. And it includes Greenland for Russia. Mm. That includes Ukraine. And for China, obviously, that neck of the woods. And Trump is even willing to trade, do business with, have a transactional relationship with those enemies. Now, that short term is brilliant. It's America first, and it will resonate, certainly, with many who feel that America isn't where it was. But ultimately, I'm afraid it does lead to a slide towards a world at war.
Mm. Looking at page 12 of your book, you have a timeline of humanity, and there are salutary lessons even without going into detail when you look at all at the empires that were and have long gone. You know, whether it's the Roman Empire, Byzantium, the Caliphates, Persia, and so on and so forth. In China, there's various dynasties that come and go. I mean, there is a lesson there. The British Empire, the sun has probably set on it, more or less. So there's a lesson there for people about hubris and their belief in their own invincibility.
I mean, absolutely right. And it was quite a task to put that timeline of humanity together. And it shows, the planet is 4 billion years old. In human form, we've been around for 300,000 years. As civilizations for the first, for the last 5,000, and we're now finally found the ability to destroy ourselves. And that chapter that you just mentioned, the introduction, I opened by saying, after 5 million years of human evolution, we are now achieving truly extraordinary things. And you think about what we're achieving in space, in microbiology and so forth, medicines. But I go on to say, what a tragedy it would be to lose it all through our own self-annihilation. And that, I'm afraid, is the reality. With more and more countries joining the nuclear club, low-yield nuclear weapons probably likely to be used on the battlefield in the next 5 years. The world is getting more dangerous, not less, and we need to wake up.
Now, you talk about step four, spot the new battlefields, nuclear, cyber warfare, space, economic warfare, climate conflict, which, of course, can lead to migration. And that can be used as a weapon by some by forcing migrants to overwhelm countries. We won't maybe dwell on that too much. Step five, a positive one, regroup with our allies. Start rebuilding those alliances that were working and have been fractured.
Yes, I mean, on the new battlefields, that underlines how different war will be, conflict will be, compared with the Second World War. And if we're honest, Britain certainly is already subject to grey zone warfare from Russia. A massive cyber attack took place against Land Rover Jaguar. It cost £1 billion. Pounds. There's been other, I think a nuclear power station in the last couple of days has been hit by Iran. That is the grey zone warfare that's already happening. Clipping of undersea cables that would cause chaos. These are the sort of things where warfare is actually becoming much easier to do and far cheaper too. We're seeing how drone warfare has reduced the cost of conflict. Therefore, regrouping with our allies, going back to that point of what do we stand for? And we think about that alliance, the biggest alliance for Britain and arguably Ireland would be our relationship with the United States. But as I touched on, Donald Trump is taking America in a very different direction. And when America and Europe are not on the same page, then our adversaries take full advantage of that. And that's what we're happening. We are seeing this other alliance, this China, Russia, and Iran, other countries linking together. And China has done something quite incredible with its strategy through its One Belt, One Road program, which is ensnaring many dozens of countries into infrastructure programs they can't afford. They're no longer going to challenge China. So you've got many countries across the world no longer seeing China as an enemy, or certainly not publicly stating so, but getting caught in its vortex. And that is the splintering of our world into two spheres of dangerously competing influences.
Now, the advice you offer is to get stronger and smarter. In other words, make sure that your armed forces and other defences, be they AI defences or whatever, are fit for purpose. Make sure you have resilience. Make sure you have a defence industry that can work for itself and not be dependent, for example, on American contractors. Put the house in order. Electoral reform to make sure that government is fit for purpose. Build off-ramps, and I'm going through these fairly quickly, to try to de-escalate existing conflicts and to avoid further ones. But the last step, reassert statecraft. Now, when you've got actors like Putin and Trump who don't want to involve themselves in statecraft, what do you do?
Well, the statecraft comes with actually having that Cold War instinct to look your enemy in the eye and stand up to them. And we've no longer been able to do that. If you take Ukraine as a great example, we should have put that fire out years ago. Britain has done well in stepping forward, but there's been a hesitation, you know, huge public debate about whether we should send anti-tank missiles or tanks themselves or F-16s or long-range missiles. In each case, we eventually did it, but only after a massive public debate. And that's the worry, as to why we're having it to take so long to be able to deal with all these challenges that we actually face. We've lost that statecraft that we once actually had. And what links it all together is what I would call the realms of competition. So you have, and we've just touched on it, you know, there's what we call the domains of war, if you like. You have sea, land, and air, but we now have nuclear. We now have cyber, disinformation, space as well. And then in the area that we've just touching on, there's the strategic and the societal. So soft power influence. We just ruined, pulled back on our overseas aid programs, which can help actually influence and put fires out before they actually start by investing in good governance and security abroad. Otherwise, migration, viruses and so forth, extremism can incubate abroad and then end up on our shores. But we've stopped doing all that. Political will is absolutely critical. And that touches on what we're just talking about. Mm. The will to stand up and look our enemies in the eye. And then industrial capacity is the final one. So there's 11 domains of war. But you know, we've just built 150 very shiny state-of-the-art battle tanks. They are incredible, Challenger 3. But after the first battle, they will limp home, having probably won, but where's our replacements? We're simply not thinking in the mindset that is preparing us for the fact that actually it's going to get very busy and very ugly in this new era of insecurity.
Well, the book has wonderful endorsements from William Hague, crucial reading on why our global order has come apart, John Kerry, an expert voice for troubled times, and Rory Stewart, fresh, provocative, and terrifying, which is what I found it, I have to say, too. 10 Steps to Prevent World War III, it's called. Its author, Tobias Elwood. Tobias, thank you very much for joining us on the programme today.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.